Welcome to The Randy Report. I'm Randy Slavacek, your host. I'm also the writer and editor of therandyreport.com, where you can find me every single day on the internet reporting on the daily news cycle in terms of politics, pop culture, and entertainment news of interest to the LGBTQ community and its allies. Today, I want to share with you a new documentary titled Everybody Dance, which follows Bonnie Schlatt's Ballet for All Kids dance studio in California, which, as the name says, teaches dance to all kids, all ages, all abilities, and disabilities, including those with special needs, whether it be physical, like cerebral palsy, or those on the autistic spectrum or developmentally delayed. Everybody Dance is Dan Watts' first documentary as a director and producer. After a career that began as a dancer and choreographer, Dan, who's openly gay, went on to work with stars like Bea Arthur and Simon Cowell, as well as working at Columbia Pictures in film development for a long time. But a few years ago, he made the decision to tell the stories he wanted to tell, with a focus on exploring the human experience, humanity, spirituality, and social issues. As I read about all these pieces to this story, it started to sound a whole lot like my own history. For those who may not know, I became a professional dancer in my mid-teens, made it to Broadway for several years, and then shifted to direction and choreography. Then, about 10 years ago, my passion turned to telling the stories of the LGBTQ community as a journalist. Plus, my own brother is on the autistic spectrum, so it's no wonder I was drawn to Dan and his film. In choosing a subject for his debut effort as a director and producer, Dan reflected on his fascination with people who study the arts but don't make it their profession. He used to ask people questions like, "How did your piano lessons help you in your everyday life or career?" In addition to having been a dancer and choreographer in his earlier days, he'd also been a dance teacher. One night, he had a dream about two girls he'd taught many years ago who had autism, even though he hadn't thought of them in some time. A few nights later, the dream returned, and he realized he'd found his first documentary subject. Everybody Dance not only explores the lives of several of the dance students at Ballet for All Kids, along with their families, but the film chronicles the weeks before the dance studio's all-important annual dance recital. That's right, these special needs kids dance on stage right next to their classmates, who Miss Bonnie describes as typical kids. I love that she never refers to anyone as normal, a word I hate. As opening night grows closer and closer, you can't help but root for these kids and their passion for dance. The film was an official selection at both the Santa Barbara International Film Festival and the Cleveland International Film Festival, and it currently has an impressive 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Dan hopes Everybody Dance will enlighten and shine a light on the importance of inclusion and accessibility. It's a joyous, inspiring celebration of art and ambition, and how studying the arts leaves everyone with skills that help us in day-to-day life, like discipline and focus. It never comes off as preachy, but rather a celebration of victory. But Dan explains all of this much better than I do. So let's chat with film director and producer, Dan Watt. Daniel Watt, as I live and breathe, how are you today?
Well, hello, sir. Nice to meet you.
It is so nice to meet you. And congratulations on your terrific, terrific new documentary that just became available on October 7th on video on demand, Everybody Dance. Now, this film resonated with me from the beginning I heard about it, because it is not only about dance and kids dancing and what we get out of dancing, but also your background, your story behind this that brought you to here, that brought you to today, reminds me about a lot of people I know, including myself. So could you just tell us, before you became a documentarian and a producer and director, what brought you to Everybody Dance?
Well, I started out studying dance in Cleveland. I started late. I started at 15. And I had a wonderful, wonderful dance teacher who would take her top students to New York. And she introduced us to, you know, her teachers, Luigi and such. And she said, this is the real world. That person you just took class with is who you're going to audition against for the role. So some of us ran to it and said, I love it. And some ran away from it and said, you know, hell no. So anyway, so that's where it started, but I couldn't sing. I have three notes that I could sing. So I could sing Matchmaker. That was like nice and easy, but nothing after that. So I decided to go to LA, and I was lucky enough to get in two dance companies. I got in the On Our Toes touring dance company through the Music Center downtown. And I did that for, I guess, 9 years. And then the Joffrey Ballet hired me. I was one, I think there were 10 or 12 of us. When they did Romeo and Juliet and Taming of the Shrew and Petrushka, those big ballets, it was cheaper for them to hire us out here than to bring in their junior company. So then I got my starring part as the dancing bear in Petrushka. My mom and dad could not be prouder. I'm in a bear outfit doing attitude turns. But then what happened was I started being asked to choreograph. So I slowly did that. Of course, the first thing I was asked to choreograph was Oklahoma, but I did it and I really, really liked it. And then I started teaching and I realized that it was time for me to shift to the other side of the table, as they say. I was being hired to choreograph and direct and do these things, but I thought, but they're not producing it right. I can do better. So I did.
Wow. So you had a sense of producing that early on.
I didn't know I did until I realized that there were better ways to do it. I mean, I had done so many that it was so nice that I was always open to suggestions, and I always surrounded myself by the directors, and I always wanted to know about the lights and the music, and I always sat and talked with these people afterwards, went out for drinks or dinner, whatever it was. And I always educated myself because it fascinated me, because, you know, how can you have 300 buttons in front of you? And they're like, how can you remember 9 dances, you know? So, yeah.
And so you went from dancing to, this is a fascinating little thing for me, in between dancing and producing this documentary, you actually worked in film development at Columbia Pictures?
I spent about 10 years producing and doing shows. And I brought in shows like, in addition to the musicals, I worked with Dixie Carter. I brought in Melissa Manchester for a show, Carol Channing, Bea Arthur. We can get to that. But I did that for 10 years. And I thought, do I want to do it again? Do I want to start with year number one and just repeat everything? Do I start with Oklahoma, just go through my complete repertoire, do it all over again for another 10 years? Or do I switch to film and television, which I always loved? I was going to be a dancer on the Carol Burnett show.
Weren't we all?
Yeah, she didn't know it. And then, you know, how dare she retire and cancel the show before I even got here? But I took it so far that I knew I was going to be the third one from the left. I was going to be next to the girl with the big brown eyes. But that's a whole nother episode. So after I did that, I thought, well, why not go for it? So I applied at Columbia Pictures and they hired me. And I applied at two places, the Dr. Phil show and Columbia. And they hired me at Columbia Pictures and they called me and they said, you're going to have to start, you know, low man on the totem pole, but you know everything that needs to be done. You just have to take it from stage and put it in on a scripted thing. And they said, learn our way of doing it. And then they put me in the development department. So I got to read all the scripts and, you know, decide, should I give this to one of the executive directors to read and such like that, watch the dailies and cut, you know, I mean, how many times do you get to sit with Jennifer Aniston, you know, and watch the dailies and decide what I should recommend to the executive to tell the editor to take out or put in. So yeah, I did that for 5 years at Columbia Pictures. And then Simon Cowell poached me to work on the One Direction movie.
Wow. And along the way, there was Bea Arthur and other people that you assisted, or you?
It was at the same time. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a dancer. You're always looking for the next job. I mean, you're always like, they won't call if you don't take it. So you say yes to everything. That's just what we were taught. After Bea did a show for my nonprofit as a gala fundraiser, she launched the whole thing. She asked me if I wanted to work for her. I'm like, I'm backstage at the theater and the lights are going off. And I'm like, did I hear? I'm sorry. I said, excuse me. And she goes, do you want to work for me? I said, okay. And she shook my hand and she did that turn that she does with her chin slightly up and just walked, and she said, see you Saturday, and walked out the door. And then I'm left in the back of the theater, the lights are all going off, and I'm like, I guess I'm working for Bea Arthur.
So after all of this behind the scenes in Hollywood at Columbia Pictures and with Bea Arthur and Simon Cowell and everything, you decided you were going to shift gears and actually produce and direct, and you somehow got to Everybody Dance. What was it that inspired you to do Everybody Dance as your first movie? What was the inspiration behind it?
Well, I've always been fascinated with people that studied the arts and didn't make it a profession. And I always, at any dinner party and conversation, I always wanted to know, if you studied dance or singing or violin and instrument or acting, and you didn't make it a profession, how did you apply those lessons? That's always fascinated me. So that was my initial idea, but I didn't quite have the way in yet. So I had a dream about this woman, Fran, and her two daughters. Now, I haven't taught them in like 17, 18 years. And I thought, well, that was interesting. I wonder, you know. And then I had the dream again about 10 days later about her two daughters in class, and they both had autism. And I thought, after I had the dream a second time, I thought, you know, that's, you know, God poking me saying, here's your movie, dipshit. Here, I'm telling you, you now have a way in. So I trusted it. I trusted that that was it. So I started doing research, and I stumbled across Bonnie, who owns Ballet for All Kids. And I decided that I wanted to use her studio and her kids if they were willing. And what I love about the studio is the title says it all, Ballet for All Kids. There are kids there with autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, and then there are atypical kids. Everyone is welcome in that studio. And when you look in the class, you don't know. You don't know who, and I thought, this story needs to be told.
What I loved in the movie, in talking about her students, Bonnie makes a point of saying her challenged students, but she also calls, instead of using the word normal, which is a word I absolutely abhor, she calls them typical kids. Mm-hmm. So we just use the word typical and move on. And that these challenged kids are dancing in class right next to the typical kids, which I thought was awesome, that it wasn't just some isolated thing only for the kids who have some sort of challenge. Now, you show us like dozens of kids throughout, but you focus on five or six students in particular and their stories, obviously because you couldn't highlight everyone. How did you decide which students to focus on?
Well, I actually started filming, I followed 11 kids and families in the beginning, but I became so close to them that I couldn't decide. So I trusted my editor, like we do in theater, you have to trust the people around you. And I trusted him, and I said, you watch the footage. You have not met them. I was up there every Saturday for 10 months. I said, you watch the footage, whose story resonates best, because you do this for a living, and who has the complete arc? And then we'll take it from there. So I actually let him decide, and we tossed it back and forth and then narrowed it down, because I was in love with all of them.
Oh, I fall in love with all of them. I really did. I have to say, a couple really jumped out at me. I fell in love with Liam and his parents. Discovering autism at 2.5 and not understanding it, but keeping going. Just for your understanding, I've talked about this on the Randy Report before. My brother is on the autistic spectrum, but he wasn't diagnosed until he was, I think, in his late 40s, early 50s. No one ever explored this aspect of my brother's life. That my dad just thought he couldn't apply himself, or he just couldn't discipline himself. It was difficult for him to keep a job. And it was mainly being on the spectrum. And so watching Liam, I saw so much of my brother in Liam, but he's so adorable. I love that he really is passionate about dancing in the movie. He explains very much so how he loves dancing. He keeps moving all the time. And I thought his story was great, so great to explore. Because a lot of times when we think about kids with special needs, we don't think about the fact that they, like everyone else, have passions. Things that they really care about. And that's one of the things this film really highlights.
And what I wanted to do, and it looks like by the reviews that they're getting it, is I wanted the kids and the families to tell their stories. I wanted to learn and be educated and be enlightened and, you know, from them. So the one thing with Liam, who I adore, you know, I'm still friends with him. The one story she told, and it's not in the film, is he couldn't open the refrigerator door. Now, you know, he's like 11 or 12. I mean, I can't, because I followed him for over a year, and he couldn't tell you why. He just couldn't do it. Think about that. And think about then when he comes home from school and wants a juice or a water, he's got to ask his mother to come down from whatever she's doing to get him that. And he gets frustrated, and but he can't put into words why he can't do it. So there was a daily training of that. And then they conquer that goal. And I just found that fascinating. And then to see him in dance class and to just be able to do everything. And when he didn't get it, he would try again. So it's what he did in dance class, he applied at home. The repetitiveness of walking up to the refrigerator, of touching the handle, is just like doing tendus and pliés every day in ballet class. So it shows you how the arts can apply the discipline in your everyday.
And I could talk about all of the kids, but one of the other stories that really hit me was Sarah, who has mobility issues, not intellectual issues, but mobility issues. She shared her fear about being excluded from things, and which everybody in the world wants to feel included, I think. And because I write about these issues so much, I think that lands with LGBTQ people, because as kids and young LGBTQ people, we don't want to be excluded for being different. We don't even probably know that we are different or how we might be different. But that really landed for me too, as an aspect of this film that's going to hit with LGBTQ audiences, is we all have felt that way.
Oh, 100%. And I think that, you know, society labels people based on, you know, everything, race, gender, class, sexual orientation, and these labels can shape expectations. Yeah. And these expectations are set by other people. These social labels can also affect our perspective on the world and on ourselves. And then that's what we do, is we then apply what they said. And,
right,
you know, and if they say we're less than, we can, it then can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, because then we've heard it, we've felt it, so then we believe it. And it's like they can become handcuffs.
Right.
And limit your potential.
Right.
Because we've heard it, we've felt it. You know what it's like when you walk into the room. Again, going back to, you know, being gay, when you walk into that room and people look at you, you can sense it. You can sense the look. If they don't like you, they do like you, or where did he come from? You know, we then internalize that.
The other thing that the film does, and I was noticing it from the very beginning, and I was wondering about, look at the volunteers, because the teenagers that are helping, because for the people who are going to watch the film, there are teens who kind of partner up with each of the kids for the oncoming, for the recital that's going to come up and for the classes. And I was thinking about them. And then you do dive into the volunteer stories. These are what Miss Bonnie might call typical kids, but they're dance students too. And they come back year after year, many of them, and they take part, and they do it because they get so much out of dealing with these special need kids. And I'm glad that you explored their stories to a degree as well.
What I love, again, also about the studio, is every child has a volunteer. So it's not so that she applies it to the point where if you're typical, you still have a volunteer dancing next to you. So that if there's someone who needs a little bit of help standing up, you know, like Dakota, you know, has her crutches. So when she's dancing, she needs somebody to help hold her. And it's absolutely beautiful when they dance together. But why would you want to make her feel less than because two people next to her don't? So everybody across the board has a volunteer. And it's just one happy family. And everyone walks in with a smile. And these volunteers, it's like they actually become your family, because they have a place in your heart.
Now, the film builds up to, with a sense of drama, which we want, to the actual recital, the big deal, the big day, everything. Now, we feel it as viewers, but when you were filming it, did you have a sense that the kids were feeling mounting pressure, or were the kids just being kids every day? I was just curious how it actually was in real life. Like, did they feel the pressure? I know Bonnie did.
She did. Yeah, oops. I think she wants one of those scenes out of the movie. Oh, well, I think whenever you put a bunch of kids together in anything like that, you're going to have the ones that are shy, the ones that are excited, the ones who want the attention and smile, and then the ones who get nervous and scared. I think that my background as a dance teacher and producing of musicals gave me a foot up on any other producer who would have tried to tell this story, because I know what goes on stage and backstage. So I actually brought in 6 more camera people because I knew there's going to be the girl backstage who can't find her slipper. There's going to be the ripped costume. There's going to be the child who doesn't want to go on stage now for whatever reason. They just don't want to do it. So I knew I had to capture that drama so that the audience would understand it and get a feel for that as long. And also while we're filming in the wings, and then I'm interviewing the parents in the lobby, but the kids didn't, to me, there was no difference than any other group of kids.
You treat them that way. You really do. I never felt at any point that you tried to turn the film into anything preachy. You just give us the kids. The viewer gets to see them stand on their own without any trickery.
I took my job very serious in regards to that. I wanted to make sure that the kids and the families told their stories, that it was in their words, so that the rest of us could get insight into it. Because like Bonnie says, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism, because every person is different. So why not offer these families the opportunity to tell us what it's really like in their world? And their world, to me, the way I look at it is that it might be different, but everybody looks at the world different.
Right.
And if when we learn to all accept that I don't have to see the world your way, then what I say is then we can learn to dance to our own rhythm, but also we learn to dance together.
Very well said. Absolutely. That's where you draw us to at the end. And by the time the curtain comes down on the recital, I'm not going to give everything away, but there's no way you're not going to feel like you've gone on the journey with these kids and their families and the volunteers and Miss Bonnie. I call her Miss Bonnie. I don't think you ever do or anyone does except me. I just said every time I heard her name, I did. Well, I want to say congratulations on the film. And I encourage people to go watch it because it is a great lesson in how studying the arts can apply to anyone, whether it's your vocation or avocation. You learn these skills and we see how those skills get applied to these kids' lives outside of putting on their dance shoes.
And at the end, make sure you have tissue.
Exactly.
I'm just saying. But they're happy tears.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I was watching and I thought, okay, where's it coming? Is it going to hit me? Am I being too cynical? Because I'm watching a documentary. No, I'm going to interview you. And I thought, is it going to hit me? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There it was.
but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that feeling. It reminds me I'm not dead. You have great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. I think you have 100% rating or something.
I know. How'd that happen?
Congratulations. But it's so nice to meet you. Congratulations on the success. And I look forward to your next film.
Well, great. Thank you so very much. Pleasure talking to you.
Thanks again to Dan for taking the time to chat. Everybody Dance is available now on Apple TV, iTunes, Amazon Prime, and Google Play. I highly recommend you watch. And that brings me to the end of this episode of The Randy Report. If you enjoy catching up on LGBTQ news in a quick podcast, I'd appreciate it if you would share it with your friends. I like to think of The Randy Report as the 60 minutes of gay news, only shorter. And remember, you can find me every single day on the internet at therandyreport.com, where I cover the daily news cycle regarding politics, pop culture, and entertainment news of interest to the LGBTQ community and its allies. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next time.